our friend Congressman Jerry Carl is on the line. Congressman, how are you this morning?
Deep in the bunkers of D.C. I'm doing well, Jeff, and congratulations to you and your wife on the new baby.
I appreciate that.
I have not talked to you since the baby's gotten here, so congratulations.
Yeah, you may hear a little fatigue in my voice doing the all-nighter, taking the night shift on babies. So it's a learning curve.
The second one's always much, much easier. So if that's any words of encouragement, I'll give it to you.
I just pray for me getting through the first one safely.
Oh, you will. Those are great days. They really are.
Let's get right into it. Now, you're at a very secure location. Just kind of for the listeners, you're on the inside there. Paint us a picture, if you would.
Well, I got in late last night. I couldn't get in my neighborhood. The D.C. police had everything locked down. So, you know, you have to show them your ID. You have to show them your driver's license, obviously, and your apartment lease or something that will verify where you live. Of course, that got to mine. The police sat outside, not my particular house, but there at the corner where I live all night. They've got the town as far as the perimeter around the White House. You know, I'd say three or four blocks are completely around everything shut down, including the neighborhoods. I walked into work this morning. I had to get some stuff done here. We were told it was shut down here. Had to come through two perimeter fences and be screened and talked to. I got stopped by two of the Secret Service was one. They stopped me in the street, questioned me and my backpack, which is fine. I mean, they're doing their job. And then I got sniffed by one dog before I got to our normal security place, which is the entrance of the building. Of course, once I get the entrance of the building, all of a sudden we go on lockdown. Sirens are going off. And, you know, I'm lost trying to find where I've got to go take a COVID test for the inauguration Wednesday. No, I have no symptoms. But I've got to be tested and be able to show that for me to pick my tickets up. So now I'm in my office, and as far as I know, we're still locked down, and we'll be here a little while. But I've got some work to do. But it has got to be the most secure place in the world. There's helicopters flying over. And there's inside the buildings, very, very empty. Nobody's inside the buildings. All the commissary and everything shut down, but give me a good chance to get some work done.
So there's other members mulling around. It's just, I guess you don't want to be there, but it's kind of got to feel a little dystopian to just be walking around any place. I mean, it's certainly, if anything, a contrast to what you're used to here in Mobile.
It's really creepy. I mean, ever since I've gotten here, it's been very creepy. And even the veterans here will tell you the same thing. Just the atmosphere and, you know, lockdowns. And of course, what happened 2 weeks ago, Wednesday. And, you know, it's been very uncomfortable for everyone. And I'm ready to get back to work and, you know, get some things accomplished for my district. We can't get anywhere worried about this, and I hope after the inauguration, obviously, everything is going to settle down, and we can get back to what, you know, what they consider a normal life around here.
What do
I haven't
you
been here long enough to figure out what that is?
Yeah, so I ask you, what do you think that looks like? Because you got to be in the minority, but the Republicans have been in the minority for 2 years already. So I mean, that's nothing new. But this time, you have a Senate. It's in you're probably going to
and
be
a
Democrat. Yeah. And so maybe it's not so much getting things done, but just being prepared to play a little bit of defense if needed.
A little bit of defense. I've really been trying to establish some relationships with two or three of the Democrats. I don't want to just say no for the sake of no. You know, I'd like to be able to work across the aisle. I do believe we'll take control in the House in 2022. I have full intentions of doing everything I can do to make sure that happens, as well as, you know, getting myself reelected. But until then, you know, as the governor would say, you just got to hunker down and ride it out. And it's discouraging because, you know, I've my clock's ticking. You know, I don't want to be up here when I'm 90 years old. And they take me out feet first. I want to get things done and, you know, done quickly. So, it's seriously, it's a weight gain. You know, people get uncomfortable and they say, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? You know, everyone wants to coach you and you want to go tear things apart. But my gracious, everything up here has been so locked down. We haven't had a chance to do anything. So, you know, a little bit of TV or a little bit of radio but our offices are clean and our apartments are clean and, you know, we're ready to go. We're just kind of waiting for things to loosen up.
I guess in this circumstance, you're laying the groundwork. What could Republicans be for should they get control of the House? Well, you know, we're going to see 20 Obamacare repeals or whatever, but you're laying the groundwork and you're setting yourself up. Well, it's not clear to me totally, though, with Donald Trump exiting the stage, really what should the Republican Party be focused on right now, big picture-wise?
Well, you know, the meat and bread of this, you know, we start talking about abortion issues and immigration. I've been watching this wave coming from Honduras. I mean, that's going to be a hot topic here in about a year and a half, if not sooner. Well, on campaign trail here in about a little over a year. But, you know, the immigration issue scares me to death. You know, so many things. Our Second Amendment rights, I mean, up here, it is crazy to own a firearm. You have to get a permit for the gun, for the ammo, for everything. You know, the First Amendment rights have been attacked, you know, through Facebook and Twitter and all the social media platforms. You know, we've got to come up with something realistic that we can all, you know, I agree with not going on there and just trashing people for the sake of trashing people. But people do have a right to say what they need to say. And you know, and if Twitter and Facebook don't want to do that, that's great. Let's pull the 230 status from them. I'm all for that. I think we ought to start with that. Just pull that, and then start negotiating. But we've got so many just the nuts and bolts, simple things that we were sent up here to actually do and accomplish. You know, it's gotten quite crazy around here. Some of the liberal things that are coming. You know, stingers that we're told Biden's going to do from the very beginning. You know, we still got to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean,
what's going to happen?
It's not clear to me how aggressive this Democrat regime or whatever you want to call it control is going to be, because if anything, this first 100 days, at least a sizable chunk is going to be focused on impeachment based on what we're seeing. Are hearing from Chuck Schumer. But if that's the case, then what's the House going to do in the meantime? Is it, you know, because we saw a lot of messaging bills at the end of the last Congress. How ambitious will the first 100 days of the Biden presidency be?
You're right. I mean, what are we going to do? Pass bills and just stockpile them for the Senate? The Senate's going to be so engulfed in the Trump impeachment. And you know, there's still a lot of questions whether they can actually impeach him or not. I know you had a conversation earlier about that. I don't think they can. I'm told that Biden can backdate that. If they were to impeach him in the Senate, he has the power to backdate it. I can't see that happening. I mean, that would be political suicide, you know, across the board. You know, for the Democrat Party as a whole, I think that would really turn a lot of people off. And I think people are tired. We want to, you know, the approval rating of the House right now, I pulled it up for our call, because I thought it was lower than what it is, but it's at 15%. How can you take any pride in something that 15% of the people think you're doing a good job? 85% think you're doing a lousy job. You and I couldn't keep a job doing that.
Well, I tell you what's remarkable about that is it like, but it's the overall body is held in low regard, but then you go into the individual districts and most people are happy with their members, so you never have any sort of really significant change.
Well, and I hope 2022 will be a change of that. You know, we're going to obviously target some Democrat districts. Obviously, we got to get ourselves. I'll be, you know, first election after your election, you know, you're pretty vulnerable. So I'll be there, but we'll start targeting some of these districts that are purple. And, you know, we may get some of those purple districts to actually work with us. I know of at least one Democrat that I've become very close with. He is so disheartened with the Democrat Party. He doesn't know what to do, but he's, you know, stuck between a rock and a hard place right now. And I wouldn't expect him to change parties by no means, but I mean, he's not the only one. Just, you know, especially as freshmen, we came up here to get things done. You know, we're ready to work. We're ready to go. And so far, all we've done is sit around and argued about, you know, the election and impeachment and issues that need to be addressed, but, you know, they're not being addressed in the proper way.
Well,
it's like the impeachment. Whether you agree with it or not, it needed some time to be looked at and investigated and talked about instead of 2 hours of just arguing.
When you talk about the other side of the aisle, you know, and I don't know what the mood is, but we get a lot of press about a possible civil war within the Republican Party, and it's Trump versus these old guard Republicans or whatever. But I think the real interesting story, at least to me right now, is the Democratic Party. What is it right now? And the glue has always been that held it together was we got to get Trump out of office. But you don't have like Trump as a foil anymore. You got to start fighting for something or taking stands or policy. And I don't think those guys on the left side of the aisle really are on the same sheet of music, if you will, when he talks about policy, that they're all over the spectrum.
And I agree with that. The Republican Party certainly is not without some problems. And we've got to have leadership to get everybody to step up and start working together and start, you know, getting a little bit more peaceful. The Democrat Party is just all over the place. I mean, you look at AOC, in one direction, and, rumor is up here she's looking at running for Senate. So, you know, that may fix a lot of things for Pelosi. I don't know. But you've got several purple states, and those purple states, they've got to really walk that fine line between being conservative and being liberal. So it's depends on where you look at it from. There's problems in both parties. And I'm gonna focus on the Republican and let Democrats focus on Democrats.
Well, I tell you where it might be interesting, though, is the system margins are so thin. If you peel off a few Democrats, then you guys on the Republican side and Leader McCarthy, you could really maybe control the floor to some degree because Pelosi is not – I don't know that she's necessarily going to be able to hold it all together there. And there seems to be an opening. At least you're going to have some small wins over these next 2 years for Republicans.
Well, you know, Pelosi, there was a chance there. I think she won by 7 votes, the Speaker of the House. I mean, they had to physically be here to vote, the Democrats did. I mean, she was bringing them in with COVID. And I mean, if they were above ground and breathing, she made sure they were here. They had little wings up there where they could be separated from everybody. And, you know, so she understands how thin the margins are. So she's got AOC on one hand that wants to take everything extremely liberal again. And on the other hand, she's got her purple states, and she's got to figure out a way of working with them. It's not going to be an easy task. Not at all. But she's a tough lady. She's tough.
I mean, she didn't get to where she was by accident or happenstance. It was calculating.
No.
And she knows how to play the game and plays it really well. But I do wonder if maybe this time her the emotions have gotten the best of her with this impeachment vote.
I still don't understand this impeachment vote. Why? I think it's all personal. I truly think it's all personal. And I want to be very cautious how I say this, but if Liz Cheney had not done what she did, and if the rioters had not broken into that building, they wouldn't have had anything. In all their speeches, that's all they talked about, how threatened they were and how Trump stirred them up and how, you know, we should listen to Liz Cheney. Now, that's what all their speeches was about over and over and over, just repetitious.
Well, well, we'll get you out of here on this one, that impeachment front. Talk to us. So, did you hear from your constituents, or have you heard from anybody that is upset about your participation, or whatever you want to call it, in protesting the Electoral College certification? And furthermore, are you getting anything, are you hearing from anybody about the impeachment itself?
Obviously, you know, my base is very grateful for the way I voted, and I voted my heart. I voted, you know, after my research and did what I wanted to do as far as researching it. I voted not to impeach or not to move forwards. I did get a couple of phone calls of people that were upset. They wanted me to go through, but I don't, you know, out of the district, I got a whole bunch out of California and New York. I mean, a bunch of them. They lit our phones up for about 3 days. But yeah, there are a handful of people in our district. You know, that's to be expected.
Yeah. Obviously, it's more of a politically diverse congressional district than maybe people realize. But I was kind of curious to see if you're getting any backlash.
Well, there's even some Republicans, obviously, that didn't, you know, the Never Trumpers. Those are the ones I got phone calls from. Doesn't matter what Trump does. They want to vote against whatever he wants. So, and they're entitled to their opinion. You know, I thank them and move right on.
Well, Congressman, we're out of time. We got to leave it there, but stay safe up there. And thanks for making time for the show this morning.
Anytime, Jeff. You take care.
All right. Thank you very much. Congressman Jerry Carl.